Great. This is Kevin Bossemeyer with KUCI and UCI Conversations, and I'm with Kate Rodriguez, who's a grad student at UCI. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. So you're a grad student at UCI. Are you specifically within CASEL? Or are you doing that kind of research?
Yeah, I've actually just wrapped up my fifth year at UCI, and I have been working for CASEL all 5 years. And I'm part of the chemical physics program at UCI, but actually my advisor, Ara Apkarian, all of his students and postdocs are sort of wrapped under the umbrella of CASEL.
Gotcha. Where'd you do your undergrad?
I went to Washington and Jefferson College. It's a really small liberal arts school in southwestern Pennsylvania, almost West Virginia.
Okay. Are you from that area back there?
Or? I am, yeah. I'm from southwestern Pennsylvania originally.
So you went to a liberal arts college. Did you always know that you wanted to go into science?
No, not at all, actually. I started out interested in English literature, which is why I chose my school, because it had a great program and a professor I had read when I was in high school and I really wanted to work with her. I only got into science because my randomly assigned roommate first year was taking organic chemistry, and she would come back to the dorm every day and complain about how hard it was and how I had no idea what it was like to go through such a difficult class. All I had to do was read stories and write about them. So purely just out of stubbornness, I signed up for organic chemistry the next day. And this was about maybe 3 weeks into the semester.
You got spunk, Kate. You're spunk.
So pure stubbornness is what got me here almost 10 years later now.
Wow. What did your parents say when you're like, hey?
Oh, my mom is thrilled. She's a mechanical engineer by training. Now she's actually a nurse practitioner, but my father's in IT, so they were thrilled.
Fantastic. So you've been a scientist for 5 years?
Yeah, 5 years of my PhD and then 4 years of science research in undergrad as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a grad student, right? So are you working on your PhD?
Or? I am. Yes, I'm in the PhD program.
Okay, gotcha. Any surprises along the way? Like, boy, I mean, you've learned so much. Had no idea I would look at this or be this something about science that just amazed you.
Yeah, definitely. I love my classes in undergrad, and I did a lot of research, but WNJ was a very small school. We had very limited resources, so I did research based on the instruments that were available. And I liked it enough, but I don't think I ever had that wow, I really love this moment. So I'm really glad I stuck it out and came to grad school, because my first couple weeks in Ara's lab on my project now, I was surprised. And still, even 5 years later, we find things in the data that surprise us. It feels like almost every week. So it's definitely, I think that's one of the greatest things about science, is filled with surprises. It never goes the way you're expecting it to, which can be disappointing sometimes, but you're always learning new things.
Neat, neat. At dinner, I was sharing with one of your fellow colleagues, and I asked her if it was tedious. The work sometimes, would you describe as tedious, or what makes you tired?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I think that's something people in science don't really talk about a lot. You're only ever talking about the amazing results. What you don't talk about is the weeks or months of work and sometimes tedium that goes into that beforehand, and I've definitely experienced that. I think probably the biggest drain for me is when we are doing the control experiments. So we have this really cool idea and we think that we're seeing something fascinating in our data, but we kind of have to rule out all of the more maybe apparent reasons why that might be happening first. And that to me gets a little tedious for sure.
When will you do your defense? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, yeah.
When will that happen?
Actually, probably in the next few months. I'm hoping to do maybe late summer, early fall, so around September or so at the latest.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you so much.
What happens then? Is that when postdoc comes into play?
Yeah, so typically you would do a postdoc if you want to stay in academia. So if I wanted to become a professor, I have no interest in staying in academia. Uh-huh. And I actually am very interested in the interface of science with business, science and law, science and commercialization. So I'm actually looking more for positions that would kind of let me do a little bit of research, but mostly kind of interface with either customers or with people who are setting up clinical trials, things like that. So I'd like to be a little bit more, kind of explore what else is out there right now.
Gotcha. Any ideas about how you're going to do that exploration? Do you have things on the horizon?
Yeah, so I've actually looked at a couple positions at medical centers that are teamed up with UCI, where they're developing medical devices, and they need someone to help design experiments and build them to verify their products. They also want people involved in clinical trials and getting those set up, making sure that the device basically checks all the boxes it needs to check. Going to hospitals in underserved areas and figuring out what do these patients actually need and how can we develop our products luck to meet those needs. And then also I'm exploring another position, maybe working with a professor, helping track the blood sugar levels in diabetic patients. Sometimes they have these inexplicable spikes in their blood sugar, even though they're eating well and exercising. So we want to kind of see if we can use data analysis to figure out why that is.
You're very well spoken.
Thank you.
Has anybody ever told you that before?
Yes, I was kind of appalled when I came to grad school, and I would be in a room with scientists who I've read their papers, I followed their work for years. They would give a presentation and I wouldn't understand a word of it.
Yeah.
And I've even seen that reflected a little bit in the Castle Retreat. It's science communication, and I think clear communication in general is not taken very seriously, and probably not just science, a lot of fields, but it's something I definitely think a lot about and actively strive to make sure.
Were you developing that in high school, or is it a more recent thing that you've done?
I might have been subconsciously. I'm a huge bookworm, so I read a lot, and I think probably most of the well-spoken people that I know in my own life are very well-read, but it wasn't a conscious effort until grad school for sure.
And how have you developed that? Anything that you've done to develop that?
Absolutely. I will record myself practicing for a talk and listen back to it, and I will count how many times I say or if I say so all of the time. That's my big go-to word, is so.
So,
so to that end, I kind of, being conscious of those things. Also, Castle has a lot of professional development, science communication, publication, writing workshops, speaking workshops. So I've probably attended half a dozen in my 5 years here.
Oh, excellent. By the way, I was the president of Zotspeak Toastmasters last year, so there is a public speaking group on campus, if you're ever interested.
I should check that out. I love public speaking. I know most people would rather die than public.
Yeah.
I love it.
It'd be perfect. I'll give it a little plug right now.
Yeah.
Zotspeak Toastmasters every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. in Aldrich Hall, in the bottom floor, room 107.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah. Visitors are always welcome. What do you think of Castle?
I have liked Castle. I think that the interdisciplinary nature of it makes it a really great center, and I don't always see that reflected in other centers. And they tend to focus more on, we're organic chemists or we're biochemists. Castle has mathematicians, engineers, physicists, chemists, and we're all trying to solve the same problems at the end of the day, but having people who think about it in different ways has been successful. I would like to see a little bit more diversity in Castle. We do a great job with our undergrads. We have a lot of partnerships with HBCUs, which have been really successful, and we've had wonderful students come through that pathway.
And what is that pathway? HBCU?
So the Historically Black Colleges and Universities.
Oh.
So Danielle Watt has done a lot of work. Right now we're partnered with Albany State University.
Okay.
And they send out usually 4 students every summer. They spend 3 months working with us in labs, and then we help them to apply for grad school or, further their education in whatever ways they become interested in. I would like to see those same efforts at the graduate level. I think, I don't know if you noticed at the dinner, but there's very few percentage of female grad students, postdocs, and professors in Castle. So I would like to see things like that addressed a little bit more.
Yeah, and when you say address it, because I noticed it too. Yeah, actually, on my radio show, I've several times interview the vice chancellor, vice provost, diversity, inclusion, and so forth. So I'm just becoming more aware of it. How do we address that? Is it just encouraging women to take that step, or do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it's a really complicated issue, and it definitely starts way earlier than grad school. There are numbers that show that at young ages, boys and girls have similar interest levels and even capabilities in science and math, but it kind of peters off after about middle school. There's a lot of research and ideas as to why that is. I'm not sure that I've spent enough time reading about it to have formulated a clear opinion, but I do think, as far as a center like Castle, directly recruiting female grad students and having more female grad students, postdocs, and PIs in more visible positions. Because it can be intimidating if you walk into a room and it's filled with men or even anyone who's a minority in any capacity, right?
Right.
So I think having a more prominent focus on that and showcasing that, we might not have that many women, but the women we do have or the minorities that we do have feel heard and respected, and you will too if you join us.
Yeah, I will say also that in this day and age, to encourage minorities, women, there has never been a more opportune moment to take advantage of those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
When I walked in, there was, I don't know how many, 15% women in the room or whatever. I thought, this is a great opportunity for women.
Yeah.
Because if you're a woman and you're interested and you're, working and you're effective, the doors are open.
Absolutely, absolutely. And people will help you get there. I mean, most, especially Castle is funded by the NSF. the NSF is very interested in diversity and inclusion, and that's actually a big part of a lot of their grant requirements. And so I think you're exactly right that the opportunity is there. This is a great time. There are so many people who are basically going to drag you in if you show even a little bit of interest. So
yeah. Great. Will you be busy throughout the summer? Will it seem like any other time of year this summer?
Yeah, you're working on the things? Months just melt away.
Right.
And holidays pop up out of nowhere. Sometimes I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I showed up to campus and there was not a single car in the parking lot. The building was locked. None of my lab mates were around. I realized it was Thanksgiving.
So just this last Thanksgiving?
I think it was 2 years ago.
Okay.
So I've gotten better since then. That's when you kind of have to step back and say, all right, I need to put things into perspective here.
And not to scare you, but about 9 months ago when I interviewed Ara Apkarian, the head of Castle, and it was like the day before Thanksgiving. So it was pretty, not many people around. I'm, oh, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? And I think he said he was coming in. Are you having turkey? He goes, yeah, turkey dogs. Because he doesn't care. He's so passionate about chemistry. He absolutely loves it.
He is. It never turns off for him. Ara is actually my boss, and it's really impressive and awe-inspiring and sometimes intimidating to see that in real life. He is always on, always ready to talk about science.
Yeah.
It's been a really cool environment to be in.
Is there any particular learning moment with him since he is, I don't know him that well, but I get the impression that almost legend, just an amazing man.
He is. One of the best things about working with Ara, and I see it, a lot of my friends are in grad school and we trade stories about our advisors. And I think one of the best things about Ara is that he is willing to explain anything to anyone. I could walk into his office tomorrow and tell him that I don't understand something that's fundamental to my research that I should have learned, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He would be frustrated, but he would sit down and walk me through it. I don't think Ara's ever told me, go consult a book, go look it up. It's always been, let's think through this together.
Yeah.
And I think that has been really great experience to be around. Yeah.
Hey, everybody out there in Radio Land, I must say that 9 months ago when I reached out to Ara and to meet him for 15 minutes to do a pre-interview, and an hour and a half later we were still talking, and I was like, I can't believe it. And he was answering the most fundamental questions that I was just interested in. And
what we call that in our lab? We say you got Apkarian'd. You always have to make sure before you go talk to Ara, you've gone to the bathroom, you've had some water, you've eaten recently, because it could be 20 minutes in his office, it could be 4 or 5 hours. So you just got to make sure you're ready for that, just in case.
Gotcha. Fantastic. Wow. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, I have so many ideas and I have so many interests that extend beyond science. I would love to get my MBA. I would love to start my own company. I would love to be a CTO. Basically, any position that puts me still squarely within the field of science, but able to bring that to other people, because I do see, I think the thing I'm probably most passionate about right now, at least, is research commercialization. And this has been amplified throughout this retreat. I hear about these amazing technologies, and some of them I think could change the world. But I have seen it time and time again that these don't make it beyond a grad student's group meeting presentation or a brief conversation you have with someone in the hallway catching up about your work. And I really want to try to explore and address that question. Why don't these inventions make it out past the lab? What's in the way? What's stopping scientists? Or is it something else? Are they not interested in getting it out there? Is it too difficult? Is it too time consuming? So I'd like to kind of mediate that process a little bit, I think.
Wow. This has been a little bit of my go-to question at the symposium. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite molecule?
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah. So I think probably right now my favorite molecule... I have a least favorite molecule. Can I tell you about that instead? Okay, so when I was an undergrad, I took a beer brewing class that was taught by one of my chemistry professors, and we each got randomly assigned a molecule that's
relevant
to beer.
This is a class?
Yeah, it was a class. It was our senior, special topics class.
Yeah.
It was very liberal arts.
Okay, good. So it wasn't at UCI.
It wasn't at UCI. It was at W&J. So shout out to Dr. Iolucci for teaching us all how to brew beer. And I got assigned this molecule. It's called eugenol. And have you ever had a banana popsicle?
Yeah.
You know that fake banana flavor?
Yeah.
So that comes from eugenol. And I hate that flavor. I also hate clove. And so eugenol, it's like a byproduct. You get it. It's like an off flavor that comes through in the fermentation process.
Oh.
And so any wheat beers or Hefs or anything like that, I just cannot drink because I hate eugenol.
Gotcha. And I actually am a banana smoothie guy every morning, and that fake popsicle doesn't work for me either.
Yeah, it doesn't taste anything like banana.
Yeah, very cool. So, well, I know what your least favorite is. Do you have a favorite?
I think my favorite molecule changes a lot. I think I have to be pretty cliche right now and say it's probably caffeine, just because these 15-plus hour days we've had during the retreat, caffeine has really come through for me.
And is caffeine a molecule?
It is. It is a molecule. Yeah. Wow. So it's a six-member ring attached to a five-member ring. It's got carbon, nitrogen, oxygen.
So is it in the periodic table or?
It's not, no. Oh. So all of the little, it's almost like the caffeine is like the, when you call it like a car or something, and then the elements are all the little building blocks that make it up. Those are what goes in the
periodic table. Maybe someday I'll understand all that. Because I keep going, kind of get a little bit here, a little bit, but I still don't have my arms all the way
around.
Is that just the nature of you keep studying?
Eventually you struggle with it enough and it'll all click into place.
Cool. By the way, coming up to the symposium, I was like, oh boy, I'm going to be with all these scientists. I don't know that much about chemistry. So, of course, I went to YouTube.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Crash Course Chemistry?
I have not.
It's unbelievable. Crash Course. You got to check it out.
Okay.
Because I think you'll refer young students, kids in high school and so forth. It's funny. It's fast-paced. It's not heavy cerebral. It's one of those things where you learn by watching it a couple times, but very entertaining. Well, hey, Kate, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.